That wasn't very graceful.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Janava Lava Girivaradari Jasoda Nandana Braja Janara Jamunatira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjam Bihari Radha Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Shutra Shutra Shri Shri Madhisarvan Grace Sisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Raja Granta Shrima Bhagavatam Ki Jai Gaudra Brindhi Dibyo All glories to the Samanavadis, all glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga Om Agyan Timandasya Nyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyarevacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Shri Vasari Kaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Fifth Canto, Chapter 18, Text Number, looks like 19.
Striyo Vritaistva Rishikeshwaram Svato. Yaradhyaloke patim asya satenyam. Tasam natevai paripantya patyam. Priyam danayum kshiyato swatantra.
All right, well.
Sriyavrutesta Rishikesharam Satoru Paradhyaloke Patamasya Satenyam Tasam Natevai Paripantya Patyam Priyam Danayum Shiyato Svatantra Striyo Vrtaistva Shikesharam Sato Yaradya Loke Patim Arashasatinyam Asante vai paripantya patyam Priyam dhanayam shiyato svatantra
Mothers
Striyo vratayastva rishikesharam svato Rishikesharam Suto Paradhoke Patamashita
Striya, all women, vratai, by observing fasting and other vows. Twa, you, Rishikeshwaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Master of the Senses. Swata, of your own accord, he certainly. Aradhya, worshipping, Loke, in the world, Patim, a husband, Ashasate, ask for, Anyam, another, Tasam, of all those women, Na, not, Te, the husbands, Vai, indeed, Paripanti, able to protect, Apatyam, the children, Priyam, very dear, Dhana, the wealth, Ayumshi, or the duration of life, Yata, because, Aswatantra, dependent. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, my dear Lord, you are certainly the fully independent master of all the senses. Therefore, all women who worship you by strictly observing vows because they wish to acquire a husband to satisfy their senses are surely under illusion. They do not know that such a husband cannot actually give protection to them or their children, nor can he protect their wealth or duration of life, for he himself is dependent on time, fruitive results, and the modes of nature, which are all subordinate to you. Purport. In this verse, Lakshmi Devi Rama shows compassion toward women who worship the Lord for the benediction of possessing a good husband. Although such women desire to be happy with children, wealth, a long duration of life, and everything dear to them, they cannot possibly do so. In the material world, a so-called husband is dependent on the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many examples of a woman whose husband, being dependent on the result of his own fruitive actions, cannot maintain his wife, her children, her wealth, or her duration of life. Therefore, factually, the only real husband of all women is Krishna, the Supreme Husband. Because the gopis were liberated souls, they understood this fact. Therefore, they rejected their material husbands and accepted Krishna as their real husband. Krishna is a real husband not only of the gopis, but of every living entity. Everyone should perfectly understand that Krishna is the real husband of all living entities, who are described in the Bhagavad Gita as Prakriti, female, not Purusha, male. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 12, only Krishna is addressed as Purusha, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam, Adidevam Ajam Vibhum. Quote, you are the Supreme Brahman, the ultimate, the supreme abode and purifier, the absolute truth and the eternal divine person. You are the primal God, transcendental and original. And you are the unborn and all-pervading beauty. End quote. Krishna is the original Purusha and the living entities are Prakriti. Thus, Krishna is the enjoyer and all living entities are meant to be enjoyed by him. Therefore, any woman who seeks a material husband for her protection or any man who desires to become the husband of a woman is under illusion. To become a husband means to maintain a wife and children nicely by supplying wealth and security. However, a material husband cannot possibly do this, for he is dependent on his karma, karmana daiva netrena. His circumstances are determined by his past fruitive activities. So if you want to get married, then you should be confident you got good karma. Or the wife should be confident that her husband's got good karma before she agrees to enter in such a relationship. Otherwise, it's going to be rough. Therefore, if one probably thinks he can protect his wife, he is under illusion. Krishna is the only husband, and therefore the relationship between a husband and wife in this material world cannot be absolute. Because we have the desire to marry, Krishna mercifully allows the so-called husband to possess a wife, and the wife to possess a so-called husband for mutual satisfaction. In the Ishopanishad, it is said, Tena Tyak Tena Bunjita. The Lord provides everyone with his quota. Actually, however, every living entity is Prakriti or female, and Krishna is the only husband. Ekala Ishvara Krishna Arasabhavritya Yare Yache Nachai Se Taiche Kare Nitya. Nitya. Krishna is the original master or husband of everyone, and all other living entities, having taken the form of so-called husbands or wives, are dancing according to his desire. A so-called husband may unite with his wife for sense gratification, but his senses are conducted by Hrishikesha, the master of the senses, who is therefore the actual husband. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay. So, in existence, there's basically two types of feelings that are there, categorically speaking. One type of feeling is something belonging to oneself, and another type of feeling is something belonging to another. And the technical terms that will be used in our theology is swakya and parakya. Swakya means something belongs to oneself, and para means others. Parakya means something belonging to others. So from the position, from the perspective of the absolute truth, everything is just a manifestation of his energies. So there's Krishna and there's Krishna's energies. There's not a third thing. So from the perspective from the perspective of Krishna, everything is swakya in the tattva of swakya or belonging to him. And nothing else is belonging to another, because there isn't another. There's just him and his energies. So everything belongs to him. In the transcendental world and also in the material world, there is a sense of belonging to something other than Krishna. In the spiritual world, there's an energy called as the Yogamaya, which creates a sense of Krishna's energies, like the gopis, belonging to another. And that sense of belonging to another makes whets Christians' appetite for pastimes. It makes it all the more tantalizing. This is actually true in the material world. When there's something that you can't get, it becomes all the more attractive and alluring. There are many movies that are created on this theme, where it's like, you know, the popular guy or the popular girl, and she can get anyone she wants, but the person that she actually wants doesn't want her. So it makes it all the more attractive and alluring because of that sense of belonging to another. I can't have it, it's not mine. And it makes it all the more captivating because of that. So that the original prototype for that reality is the spiritual world, where Yogamaya creates the sense that some of Krishna's energies, like the gopis, belong to others, husbands and so on. And that sense of belonging to another gives the greatest pleasure to Krishna, because he has to go all out of his way to sneak around and associate with the gopis and so on. And this gives, it makes the Leela all the more playful and tantalizing for Krishna. So this desire is called Parakiya Bhava, or this feeling of belonging to another, because it brings the greatest pleasure to Krishna, is considered the highest truth in our philosophy. Although it resembles the paramour love of the material world, it is the purest conception of Krishna consciousness, because it brings the greatest pleasure to Krishna. And therefore, especially Gaudiya Vaishnavas in our line, we aspire for such a position. It's not that it's imperative, it's basically your choice. But the general line of thought that is seen in our tradition is a desire to become a maid servant or a gopi of Krishna, because it creates a sense of belonging. I belong to someone else. This is my so-called husband over here. And it makes it, that sense gives the greatest pleasure to Krishna. And since that is the essence of Dharma, Dharma means what? To satisfy Krishna. What is that verse? Samsudya Haritoshana, how does it start? Atapumbir Dvija Sheshta Vanashrama Vibhagashaha. Then Sanushitasa Dharmasya Samsudya Haritoshana. That's correct. It seems like someone's not, I thought I heard someone whispering that. So what is Dharma? What is the culmination of Dharma? Sanushitasa Dharmasya. What is Dhamma? Dharma means what? Samsudir Haritoshana, to satisfy Krishna. That is the essence of what Dharma is all about, real Dharma. And so, because this brings the greatest pleasure to Krishna, this is the highest conception of Krishna consciousness. And those in the Krishna consciousness movement aspire for entering such a ideal of Krishna consciousness, namely the Parakiya Bhava, or the feeling of belonging to someone else, because that gives the greatest pleasure to Krishna. Now, this sense of belonging to someone else also does exist in the material world, and it also exists due to the influence of Yogamaya. But the actions of Yogamaya in this case are much different than in the spiritual world, as Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavritaha, that the living entities in this world do not know me because of the influence of the deluding aspect of Yogamaya. So it creates a sense that in the material world, we don't call it parakiya bhava. In the material world, we call it a separatist attitude, a sense that I'm separate from Krishna, I have my own independent existence. And that way we get attached to the material world because we have a sense of existing separate from Krishna. And this is, of course, due to the deluding aspect of the Yogamaya potency, or we also call it as Mahamaya. So it creates a sense that I belong to another, and Krishna's completely out of the picture, and it's not for bringing pleasure to Krishna, but it's for bringing pleasure to my own self, a self-aggrandizing sort of attitude. So due to that sense of separateness from Krishna, then we desire accordingly. And as that verse I like to quote mentions, Bayam dutiya abhinivesha tasyat, we become absorbed in a secondary, because we don't know that everything is Krishna, or Krishna's energies, as it were. Then we become absorbed in a second idea, you know, getting a husband or getting a wife or getting a good job or some type of second idea that has nothing to do with Krishna or the Krishna conception. And this is due to the deluding energy of Krishna. So then here, Lakshmi is praying to her husband, Kamadeva, for the benefit of all persons who are stuck up in absorption in a secondary idea, dvitiya abhinivesita. And the secondary idea, in context here, from what Prabhupada says, she's specifically praying for women who are desiring to get a husband.
thinking that anyone else can be the husband but Krishna. Actually, factually, Krishna is the husband for everyone, including us. I need a husband too. And the reason for that being is because we're all Prakriti. And this is what Prabhupada is describing here in the purport. Actually, everything in this world is Prakriti. Prakriti on the outside, Prakriti on the inside. There's nothing but Prakriti in this whole material existence. There's not even a Purusha. There's only one Purusha there is Krishna. So the sense that there is a Purusha is Maya. Maya means, one way of translating Maya is that which is not. So it looks like a man, but it's not. It's Prakriti. The body that looks like a man is Prakriti, and on the inside, the soul, is also Prakriti. So there's only Prakriti going on in this material world. So one Prakriti is copying the position of a husband, so-called husband, and the other one in delusion is thinking, this is my husband, and actually it's just two Prakritis coming together. Maybe this is the origin. Anyway, I was going to say something. Perhaps inappropriate for the Bhagavatam class. But this is the idea. Anyway, I would say it anyway. Andrew Prabhu used to express it in this way. This is like, this is like the original lesbian conception. It's stemming from this. One Prakriti hooking up with another Prakriti is one copying the position of a man because they may have a man's body, which is also Prakriti. And so this is what's going on in the material world. We're all deluded. This is my husband. And the husband is thinking, I'm the man of the house. And what does it mean to be the husband? It means to be the protector. It means to be the provider. It means to be the sustainer and the enjoyer and the controller. This is what it means to be the husband in the real sense, in the constitutional sense. Purusha means these things: the protector, the provider, the enjoyer, the controller, the sustainer or maintainer. This is what it means to be the husband. So when someone agrees to become the husband of someone, then what they're saying, I will protect you, I will maintain you, I'll, you know, provide for you, I will, of course, enjoy you, or I will control you. This is what it means to be the husband, actually. And the only person who can actually fill the shoes of that role is Krishna. And the reason for that being is mentioned here by Lakshmi, because all others who are copying the position of husband, but who are factually Prakriti, is mentioned here, they are aswatantra. They are not independent. So this is the problem with those who cop the position of husband in the material world. They are not independent, or that is to say, they are dependent or under the control of God, ultimately. And Prabhupada mentions, although the Sanskrit in the translation of the verse, Prabhupada mentions here, you won't find it anywhere in the Sanskrit on the board, but Prabhupada mentions here, he is himself dependent on time, fruit of results, and the modes of nature. And this is Prabhupada's little, you know, poetic, you can, how do you say, add-on, to help us get an idea that the living entity in the material world is not independent. He's actually under the control of a superior power. And therefore, he can never really fulfill the shoes of being a husband proper. Therefore, those who are in illusion, the women who are in illusion, who are praying to get like this ideal, perfect husband, they necessarily must be disappointed because he can never fulfill the shoes of that role because he's under superior control. And so also the man who's thinking, I'll be the best husband that there ever was, he's also in a similar delusion because that's not possible because he's under superior control, aswatantra, he's not independent. So this, the way Prabhupada's rendered this verse reminded me of a section of the first canto, Bhagavatam, chapter 13, where Narada Muni is chastising Yudhishthira Maharaj. The scene is Yudhishthira Maharaj's uncles, Dhritarashtra and Vidura, were staying in his house. He was actually giving shelter to Dhritarashtra for some time. And Dhritarashtra was getting old and he was on the verge of death. So Vidura, after 30 years of pilgrimage, came back to Hastinapur just to deliver Dhritarashtra, who was his older brother. At that time, he preaches very, very heavy to Dhritarashtra. It's worth looking at that section. Maybe help break a little bit of illusion. And he speaks very, very heavily to Dhritarashtra, at which time they decide to leave in the middle of the night without letting anyone know. Because if anyone knows, they'll try to convince you with all their family charm, you know, I love you and all this stuff, and convince you to stay and rot in, you know, householder existence. So then he preaches, just leave in the middle of the night so no one knows. So they leave in the middle of the night for gaining liberation. And in the morning time, when Yudhishthira Maharaj, he had his morning program, and part of the morning program was going to visit Dhritarashtra to see, you know, how he was doing. And he noticed that both his uncles were gone, so he goes into an anxiety, he's crying, he's distraught, and he's thinking, who's going to give them protection? This is the husband idea. Who's going to give them protection? And at that time, in great distress, Narada Muni comes on the scene. He offers a quick glorification and then gets straight to the point. You know, where's my uncles? It's a nice section because you see it's, he did the formality of offering proper regard to a spiritual authority like Narada, but his heart was really where my uncles. So he immediately inquires from his uncles about, from Narada Muni about the situation of his uncles, to which Narada Muni begins chastising him, actually saying, you think you're the protector? What are you going to do? And there's a particular verse, and the verse, this way Prabhupada rendered this translation here reminded me of this verse in that section, and it fits here actually. He mentions that that what is your body is itself already under the control of kala, karma, and guna. Kala, karma, guna, dino, dehoyam, pancha, bhoktikai. Your body, the body which you will use to give shelter to others, because that's what we're trying to do in the material world. We're trying to give shelter to others with our material body, our material mind, and intelligence. So he says, this material body and mind that you're thinking is going to give shelter, kala, karma, guna, adino. It is already under the control of time, karma, and the modes of material nature. So you're in other words, you're not independent. You're under control in this material world. You're under the control of the influence of time, and your activities are all influenced by the material nature. What is that verse from Bhagavad Gita, the famous one? Ahankara vimudatma kartahami tamayita. How does it start? I'm going old. Pakriti kriyamanani gunais karmani sarvashaha. Ahankara vimudatma kartahami tamayita. Krishna says that the all of our activities are under the influence of the gunas, or the modes of material nature. So if you're in the mode of passion and ignorance, then your activities aren't useful for anyone. Passion activities are lead to misery. Ignorant activities lead to destruction. So if you're in the mode of goodness, then your activities may do something good, relatively speaking, may do something good for others. But then even that good work is crushed by the time factor. So this is how Prabhupada's purport describes it. So anything good that you do, any situation you create to create a sense of shelter for others would ultimately be smashed by the time factor anyway, if your activities are in the mode of goodness. So then he says, therefore, katama yam tu gopayat, who in his material world can give protection? Sarpa grasto yataparam, who in this world can give protection when they're under the grip of the snake's mouth? And that the snake here represents, of course, kala, karma, and guna. So you're already about to be crushed, so who can give protection? There's a National Geographic image of a snake about to devour a bird, you know. It's a really cool picture. I have it on one PowerPoint that Avelo made for me. There's this cool picture, the snake's mouth like this, and the bird is sitting in his mouth, and he's completely oblivious. I think he's not facing the mouth of the snake. So he's just completely oblivious, just, you know, having a good old time. But he's about to be eaten by the snake. Such is existence. Such is our existence in this material world. We're moving along happily, thinking I'm the shelter for someone, or I've taken shelter of a proper person. But actually, we're being crushed by kala, karma, and guna. Therefore, being under the control or a swatantra, not independent, we can't give shelter to anyone properly, and we can't take shelter of anyone in this material world who will ever be satisfying for us. There will never be a person that's satisfying enough for us on the material platform. So then, well, what to do? So Prabhupada does mention here that Krishna says, or it's said in the Ishvapanishad, that you can take your quota. So there's a sense that, oh, I need to get married, I need a shelter, I need a man, I need a woman. So then, okay, you can take your quota accordingly. But you should do so with this understanding, so that you're not an illusion when you end up in a dissatisfying situation within that. First of all, we should know that no matter how perfect a situation is, like if you follow all the rules of Dharma and everything is exactly right, it will still be dissatisfying.
there will still be an element of dissatisfaction because it's not Krishna, which is the ultimate shelter for the soul. So with this understanding, we enter into a situation not deluded about what it's going to be. Because we do have the tendency to think romantically about these types of things. Especially sometimes when you're in the Brahmacharya ashram, for example. And, you know, in Brahmacharya ashram is tough. You got to, you know, show up for the programs, and there's so many services, and no one ever appreciates you even one time, even after several months. And it gets kind of taxing, you know. So then one starts imagining that it would be really nice if I had a good religious wife, you know. And generally, I'll to be honest with you, the illusion goes something like this: and she will cook for me at the proper times all the right meals for my particular constitution. The illusion really does go like this. I've heard many devotees say like this, and it's someone I can share my heart with, you know, in an intimate setting and so on. And so the brahmachari, he meditates in this way, entering deep into delusion. And then, and similarly, for the householder who thought all of those things were going to be there and therefore they got married, they think, man, the brahmacharya ashram is so much better. This is what Prabhupada termed as the Delika Ladu, a type of famous ladu, it seems, in Delhi, which if you eat it, you suffer, and if you don't eat it, you suffer. Apparently, when you don't eat it, it's so tantalizing that you're like, I gotta have it, I gotta have it, I gotta have it. So the mind causes so much suffering. And then when you eat it, it's not satisfying enough. You want more of it, or it wasn't as good as you thought it was going to be, and so you suffer in another way. So this is the situation. One enters into illusion. Oh, it would be so wonderful if I just had someone I could share my heart with, over myself too. You know, I can control my own schedule. That's a really major one for living in the brahmacharya. I could control my own schedule. These random services wouldn't pop up. You know, it'd be all wonderful like that. And then you enter into the situation and you realize it's like another brahmacharya ashram, except the wife is the temple commander. It's more the same. In other words, in all situations, it's going to be dissatisfying. It's not a perfect situation in the material world, because the actual shelter for the soul is Krishna. And so Lakshmi Devi is praying this way to help us understand that Krishna is really the shelter. Now, according to my kind of psychological makeup, I may need a certain support in my movement towards the pure conception of Krishna consciousness. And sometimes that certain support may be the Brahmacharya ashram. Sometimes that support may be the Grihastha ashram. It really doesn't matter. Whichever one helps our movement towards Krishna, that's the best situation for us. But in both situations, we understand that the real shelter, my real husband, even if you're a man, is Krishna. And our chanting Hare Krishna, which is the primary methodology for realizing this, the primary methodology for realizing God is my husband. He's really my sweetheart. That methodology for realizing that is Krishna consciousness, of course, headed by the chanting of the holy names of Krishna. When we chant the holy names of Krishna, it's for realizing Krishna is our husband. Or for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, even higher than that, that Krishna is our lover. Not that we should artificially start meditating on that, okay, Krishna's my lover, Krishna's my lover. Krishna, it shouldn't be an artificial meditation, but we should know what is the goal from the very beginning of our activity. And the goal is to realize through the chanting of the holy names of Krishna that Krishna is my husband, minimally, or furthermore, a higher conception for Gaudiya Vaishnavas is Krishna is my lover. the idea of trying to be the shelter for anyone or taking shelter of anyone in the material world is a self-defeating meditation. And it deviates us from the goal of life. So Lakshmi Devi is praying to her husband Kamadev here to point out this reality for all those who are thinking that someone else in this material world can play the husband, who can be the protector and the provider and the maintainer and the controller and enjoyer. You'll never be satisfied. And in this way, she shows mercy not only to women, as Prabhupada actually says here, but she actually is showing mercy to all of us who are thinking that way. Because even though some of us have men bodies, because we're actually Prakriti, the sense of wanting to be sheltered is also strong in us as well. So it's not like, oh, women, they need to feel protected and sheltered. Those in man bodies need the same, they have the same exact feelings, in fact. And usually because of not knowing how to be a man, That, because we're actually Pakriti, for us to be a woman is actually more natural, really, in that sense. But, and therefore, in Vedic culture, you have to be trained how to be a man. Otherwise, you're in a man's body, but you actually constitutionally have a woman's psychology. And so you're thinking, in a man's body, with a woman's psychology, that I'm going to take shelter, and you're thinking that your wife is going to be the shelter. Sometimes that thought comes up. So just as a woman trying to take shelter of her husband, the man, as I've already described, he's thinking that my wife will give me, she'll be the one I can reveal my heart to. And he's thinking the same way, actually, that here's someone I can take shelter of, because he has that Pakriti psychology, which is a woman's psychology. So then Vedic culture would train souls how to be a man, how to be a Purusha, you know, because you have a body for doing that. But at the same time, spiritually speaking, we like any woman, have the same feelings of needing to be protected, needing to feel sheltered and loved, and so on. All those feelings will be there. And therefore, Krishna consciousness is the only thing that can ultimately bring solace to the heart. Any other type of illusory conception is ultimately frustrating. So Lakshmi Devi prays to guide all of us towards the lotus feet of Krishna as our actual husband. So that would be my discussion. Are there any questions or comments? Or anyone wants to say anything? No? Okay, yeah.
Thanks a lot for the class, Prabhu. I was thinking if you would be able to compare and contrast the husband-wife relationship with a Shiksha Guru disciple relationship. I mean, of course, they can't create children other than that.
I haven't meditated on this subject matter very deeply, so I don't think I can do that right now and very effectively. But in short, the spiritual master is a manifestation of Krishna, actually, right? So in one sense, he is a manifestation of our husband, our eternal husband, the guru, constitutionally speaking. So, huh? You're talking about a material husband? Well, okay. Anyway, we'll speak. Even the material husband is supposed to be a manifestation of Krishna, or seeing in that. Yeah, provided he got proper training and all that. So I don't know if that really applies in the modern Kali Yuga situation. But let's take the spiritual master. He's really a manifestation of our eternal husband, Krishna. And so it is natural for a disciple to feel sheltered in his association, which is the main role of a husband towards his wife also, even the material husband. The main role is to create a sense of shelter and protection. Therefore, it's mentioned in Vedic culture, we were hearing this, that in some cases it's even considered permissible for the husband to lie to the wife. Supposedly, to lie to the wife. Because suppose he gets fired from his job, for example. If he comes home and tells her, I got fired from her job, she'll start going crazy. Wait a minute, you know, who's going to provide the bills? Who's going to pay the bills? She starts going berserk. So in order to protect her from that unnecessary anxiety, which is anyway not useful for her, complaining about it isn't going to change the situation. So in certain circumstances, it's considered permissible for the husband to lie to the wife. But the principle is not lying is good. The principle is protecting the wife or giving shelter to the wife. So because that's the main principle, let's say. So then in certain situations, it may be considered permissible to lie to the wife. So in that sense, the guru and the husband have parallel roles in that they're giving shelter or a sense of protection in this dark material world. Also, traditionally, in a Vedic perspective, the husband is meant to be like the, let's say, most intimate teammate for moving towards Krishna consciousness, ultimately, the pure spiritual conception. That's why a husband was so glorious traditionally, because he was actually Krishna conscious. And one purport in the seventh canto, Prabhupada says, basically, in short, I can find it for you also, that if the husband isn't a pure devotee, the wife is not obliged to stay with him. Prabhupada makes such a statement in the. I remember I brought this up in Gita Nagari in one of the mentors' meeting, I think Brajvi Harper was like, "Where does it say that?" I said, "I'll find it for you," you know, because I remember I thought the statement was so radical, you know, so I made sure I had it to memory. And then I showed it to them. I said, look, Prabhupada's saying it right here in the seventh canto. In other words, the husband was glorious because of his ability to give spiritual shelter also and guide the wife towards Krishna consciousness and ultimate conception. So also that's what the spiritual master is doing. He's providing, he's our most intimate associate for giving shelter and moving us toward the pure conception of Krishna. And this way, their roles would, in an ideal sense, we don't live in an ideal world, but in an ideal sense, their roles are very parallel. The guru-disciple, the guru's relationship to the disciple and the husband's relationship to the wife have parallel roles. Although there are some differences, as you point out, the spiritual master can't provide children for the disciple and so on. And there are various differences that are to be acknowledged as well. But in terms of the ultimate role that they play, they're parallel, they're similar like that. That's all I can do right now. I haven't deeply meditated on this particular topic, so I hope that's good enough. Okay, I saw Jitendra Prabhu was just nearby, and then I don't know if you wanted to say something. I saw this.
I was thinking on marriage in ISKCON. We seem to have a high failure rate, and we're supposed to be the ideal examples for society, I think we fall short of that. But why do you think that's so?
Because we enter into the situation in illusion. I think that's what it is. We enter into the situation thinking everything's going to be, you know, like the movies. Many of us practically saw too many movies before we became devotees. And in the movies, everything is like super excellent. You know, the boy meets girl, the girl meets boy. The music comes in right at the right moment. You know. And it causes all these sorts of sentiments in the heart to become manifest and so on. Someone's thinking like that, that it's going to be like, okay, I know there's going to be some troubles, but the strength of our love will overcome it. And then they enter into the situation, they realize they ain't got no love. and then they divorce and move into another situation and move into another situation, move into another situation. In other words, people are an illusion. So the Bhagavatam, study of the Bhagavatam is to make the situation very clear. You know, the reason they speak so heavily about family life, I was hearing the other day, it seems it's Bhaktivedanta Purnamaraj's point. One reason he says is that because we have a tendency to be in illusion, the Bhagavatam speaks more heavily about family life than it does positively. Because it does speak both negative and positively, but it speaks more negatively about household situation because we have a tendency to be in illusion about it. In other words, because we are habituated to a certain improper movement in that situation. So the Bhagavatam speaks more and more about it in a heavy way, just to try to remove the delusion from it. And I don't think devotees read the literatures very sincerely. And they enter into a situation thinking it's going to be nice and wonderful, and then trouble comes up very quickly, and then they can't maintain. I mean, in theory, that's probably the reason. I'm sure there are great details, but in theory, that's what it is.
Motive passion.
Motive passion, yeah.
We don't have any money for what we lost.
Yeah, basically. Okay, did you want to say something? Or? Okay.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. This question is stemming from the 11th canto. You know, when the Navyogendras are speaking to King, I think his name is Fateha, and the second chapter's point that even King Nimi, even if you were to run with both eyes closed, you know, as if blind, then still there is no loss.
Of course, that's in the context of glorifying Bhagavad Dharma.
Right, that's in the context of glorifying Bhagavad Dharma. So,
another verse from our discussion yesterday. Got it? That's another verse.
Sincerely, if one is not so learned in the devotional scriptures, but he's very sincere and he's executing everything in full Krishna consciousness, then such a person is great. You know,
yeah, but later on it says that even if he receives a revelation from within the heart, it shall not contradict the scriptural conclusions.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's just another way of getting the same point. Mm-hmm. One point, one way of getting it is to, I don't know how I remember that purport, but I remember I liked it. So that's one way of getting understanding is by reading the scriptures. Another way may be through the heart, which is not for everyone, but it may be for certain individuals. Mm-hmm. And whatever information they get from within the heart will not contradict the scriptural presentation. And therefore, it's just another way of getting the same information. So it's not that they're going to be doing something random and say, oh, I got inspiration from the heart, but it contradicts the scriptures.
So this question was stemming from your point about how through our chanting, we're trying to attain a higher conception of our relationship with Krishna. And so my question was more about emphasis, you know, so it seems to me that the emphasis could be in either place, like someone could go this way or that way, but they'll both eventually come to the same realization.
What's this way or that way?
As in, one could choose to be just very sincere in his services without edifying himself with the scriptures of devotional service, or someone could...
No, he has to edify himself with the scriptural conclusions, either by studying them or by hearing from them. From a self-reliant spiritual master. In the age of Kali, Krishna mentions this in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, verse 26. In the context in which this verse appears, Krishna is speaking about different types of sadhanas for realizing the Supreme Lord, Paramatma in context. And then he speaks about, and then there are others who shall realize the Supreme Lord from hearing from authorities, even though they are ajanata. Ajanata means they're ignorant of spiritual life and conclusions. But they shall realize, they shall begin worshiping the Lord by hearing about the Lord from authorities. And because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death. So the point is that if you don't have the capacity to edify yourself by study, then you have to edify yourself by hearing. Not that you don't study or hear and expect to get the highest fruit. You can get some fruit, of course, by doing that. But you definitely won't get the highest fruit without edification, which comes not really, but really by both. But if you can't study, there are many devotees who don't have the capacity for scriptural analysis, shastra yukti. But they come to understand all the conclusions by hearing from authorities. There are many devotees like that. I hear there's a story of one devotee who was living in Vrindavan. I don't know if he was illiterate or something, but I don't think he could read the books, but he would just simply listen to Prabhupada's lectures constantly throughout the day for many, 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 many years. And one day they asked him to give a class, and he was quoting shlokas, he was giving an understanding of the philosophy and so on, just by hearing. Such is the power of hearing, such is the method of learning in Vedic culture traditionally. There weren't even books. The method of actual learning was to hear. Therefore, Shruti Praman, that which is understood by hearing, Shabda, sound vibration. So one has to edify himself in the knowledge of Krishna consciousness by study and or by hearing. Otherwise, he can't expect to get the highest fruit. He could get some fruit. Maybe some anarshanavritti and so on, a few other things. But he's not going to get the highest thing without... If you don't even know where to go, then how are you going to go there? You know, it's like, if I don't know where New York is, I don't even know there is New York, how am I going to reach there? So you should know there is New York, you should know how to get to New York, and that you can get by a map or you can get by hearing from someone. So like that, some people who think like that are being idle or lazy.
Very reassuring, because I always find that I don't get as much out of my reading as I do from the hearing process, so it's helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Achari, Nishir, what did you want to say? No. Yeah, Jitendra Prabhu.
Swami, when he comes, but he gave a class and he said, we remember certain things that we see and hear, and then what we read or what we hear from other people. Do you remember the percentage of that?
No. I don't usually get into those numbers and all that.
I don't know. It's just he kind of...
Another meaning of Maya is to measure. That's another meaning of Maya, to measure. So I usually don't get into those types of things. The point is here. You know, take the essence.
Yeah. I'll just wait till he gets here.
Yeah, you could ask him.
Hare Krishna.
Okay. Om Tat Sat. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Om Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.